but alone. Everyone else is dismissed.
Inda and Pons leave without a word. Rowan slogs out after them, his breakfast gone cold. Devon embraces his mother again.
Brock will be all right.
Mathura lays her cheek against his shoulder.
I lost him once. I cannot lose him again.
Brock was presumed dead until a few moons ago, a cover-up for his real mission of joining the rebels. He worked with Hostin to unseat Raja Tarek, but gave up that life when he reunited with his family. Devon holds Mathura for a long moment.
I'll find him, Mother, I swear it.
She releases him, and I fight back the urge to take her place in his arms. I do not need his comfort. I want to comfort him. Chit offers Mathura his elbow, and they go. Only Devon, Ashwin, and I remain. Given our quarrel last night, it is a wonder we are all in the same room together without arguing. Ashwin waits until the door shuts and extends a letter to us.
Late last night, I received a message from the Buddha warlord. Hostin has requested a meeting with the kindred and me.
Of course Hostin knows where we are. He has informants all over the continent. Devon demonstrates no inclination to take the letter, so I do, and read the warlord's message aloud. I would like to propose an accord. Meet me in Samia to discuss uniting against the demon Raja. My heart yanks hard in my chest. I have not returned home since Tarek claimed me, but I dream of the mountains often. Jaya is always in my dreams, as is Devon. Why the temple?
Samia is a neutral site, replies Ashwin. Hostin wouldn't dare attack us on sacred ground. You've clearly never met the Buddha warlord,
Devon retorts. I finger the Tarachand seal, a scorpion, at the top of the letter. Hostin stole this parchment from the Raja's personal belongings in the palace. I want to disregard his request just to spite him, but I consider it for the Ranis and courtesans he has trapped there. They and their children are caught in the middle of this war. An alliance could set them free. We should go, I say. Devon tugs the letter from my hand.
I cannot believe you're considering this.
We cannot rightly ignore him. The demon Raja is more powerful than we are, and he has our army. The Listarian navy is of no use to us now.
Not entirely.
Devon tosses aside the letter. Ashwin tries to catch the corner, but it drifts out of reach to the floor.
Other waterways lead to Vani. The navy could still fight with us. Hostin's troops are already in Vani,
counters Ashwin.
With the rebel soldiers on our side, we can surround the Imperial Army when they reach the city. The Imperial Army may be scattered, but it's the largest in the world,
Devon explains.
On his way, the demon Raja will pick up deserters. The closer he gets to Vani, the more loyalists he will bring into his fold. Army outposts are stationed all along his route. His troops will rally with him and his ranks will swell.
Even more reason why we need the rebels, I counter. Hostin may have a vendetta against Tarek, but he's no fool. He knows he cannot defeat the demon Raja without help.
Do you really believe the rebels want to unite?
Devon jabs a finger at me, marking his every point.
Hostin betrayed you. He tried to murder Ashwin by burning down the Brotherhood temples. Hostin will sooner slit the prince's throat than unite with Tarek's heir.
Ashwin swallows loudly, his color paling. I have not forgotten Hostin's actions, nor has my guilt lessened over my former naivety. Hostin used me to further his vendetta against Tarek. The result goes beyond the loss of the Turquoise Palace and his imprisonment of the Raja's wives and courtesans, many of whom are my friends. Hostin murdered palace guards and soldiers. To escape him, citizens fled the empire to the Sultanate. Many fell ill with swamp sickness in the encampments and died. Our downtrodden people were primed for the return of Raja Tarek. Without their hardships, I doubt they would have so readily accepted his miraculous resurrection. But thanks to Hostin and the landslide of suffering his insurgents caused, our people and army are now following a demon. No, I have not forgotten Hostin's part in our misery. But I am not the same woman I was when we first met. Hostin will not deceive me again, nor will he keep what is rightfully mine. He has my father's journal, my only connection to my parents. The last time I saw the warlord, he dangled the journal before me as a bribe, but I refused to align with him over Ashwin. I have been patient long enough. I want what is mine.
Kali, this is Hostin,
Devon says.
He's setting a trap.
I nearly crack under the weight of his warning, but the gods have preserved my life to stop the fall of the Empire. And I will do just that. We cannot stand against the Demon Raja alone. Partnering with Hostin is our best chance of winning.
I'll send him a carrier dove right away.
Ashwin selects a plain piece of parchment to jot his letter upon.
We'll agree to meet at the Samia Temple, far away from the Sea Raiders and the Imperial Army. You'll also be far away from help when Hostin stabs you in the back,
Devon clips out.
We have another reason to meet in Samia.
Ashwin picks up an open book.
I spent the night researching demons in hope of discovering the Voider's identity. Many demons serve Kor, but I narrowed them down per their abilities and found one that possesses the icy breath of cold fire.
He shows us the page, with a sketch of a demon exhaling a plume of blue flames. Devon and I shuffle closer to read the caption beneath the drawing, and our sides bump. He steps away and tells Ashwin to summarize.
The demon's name is Udug, Kor's top commander. Udug has three siblings who are also eternal soldiers of Kor's, Edimu, Asag, and Lilu. All four of them possess a version of Buddha's land, fire, sky, and water abilities.
Devon's brows shoot up.
Udug and his siblings have Buddha abilities? A perverted form of them, though their powers are rarely seen in our realm. It's a long-held belief that demons are more powerful in the dark.
The Voider, Udug, serves the demon Kor, who holds a grudge that goes back millennia. To the war between the sky god Anu and his primeval parents. Kor means to avenge the deaths of the primeval gods by wiping out mankind's strongest connection to Anu, Buddhas. The first Buddhas vanished Udug long ago, and their method was recorded in a sacred book. A book Udug destroyed. I point at the picture of the Voider. What does any of this have to do with Samia?
The god's temple was built at the top of the Alpana Mountains,
Ashwin answers. Every member of the Parijan faith believes in Ikor, the god's mountain house, though no mortal has seen it.
This book says the only way to vanquish a demon is to banish it, just like the first Buddhas did. We have to find the gate to the void and return Udug through it. The gate is rumored to be hidden near Samia.
The sisters often spoke of Ikor, but they neglected to mention that an entry to the void was close to our temple sanctuary. That is, assuming they are aware it is there. Devon blusters out a breath.
Kali, he's only trying to convince you to go with him. The rebels don't want to make peace with us. Hostin will never side with him.
He motions at Ashwin.
He represents everything the warlord despises.
Ashwin rubs the back of his neck tiredly.
Your concerns are noted, Devon.
But his concerns are no excuse for his lack of compassion. Ashwin has scars running down his back from a lashing Tarek gave him. He suffered his father's wrath as much as anyone. Ashwin is not his father. You need to stop punishing him for Tarek's actions.
I'm not punishing him. I'm reminding you who he is and how much Hostin hates him.
Devon puts his hands together as if in prayer, begging me to listen.
This will end badly. Please, go with the Navy or stay here. I'll rejoin you after I find Brock.
Come to Samia with me. My selfish request is small of me, but I do not care. Devon stares back, incredulous. The events of last night are too fresh in his mind. The back of my throat aches for his forgiveness.
Kali, I have to find Brock.
You said yourself he'll be fine. He's too clever to be captured. Come with us.
You know I cannot.
I know Devon will risk his life to save his brother's, and I cannot bear to lose him. I try one last entreaty. I cannot imagine returning to Samia without you. Devon's eyes go wide, and understanding passes between us. Returning to the Alpanas together is our dream. Ashwin drops the book on the table with a bang.
I'll go to Samia alone, then.
Wait. I grasp at him, desperate for all of us to come to an accord. Please, don't go.
Yes, you stay,
Devon growls.
I was just leaving.
I let go of Ashwin and reach for Devon. I didn't mean... Devon prowls out and slams the door. I think to follow him, but the prince encloses my stiff frame in an embrace.
Let him go. You won't change his mind.
I try not to melt under Ashwin's touch, but his body heat soaks into me and the sudden change is irresistible. Maybe we should listen to him.
Kalinda, we're acting in the Empire's best interest. Together with the rebels, we will stop Uduk.
For the first time, Ashwin sounds certain that we can succeed. I drive away my guilt at needing and appreciating his touch, and remain near him. We will go to Samia without Devon, but his refusal to support us leaves a sourness in my mouth. He, of all people, would appreciate why we need the rebels' help. With Uduk closer to Vani than we believed, trusting the warlord is a risk we must take.
6. Devon. I lean against the wall outside the prince's door, my fists quaking. Kali took Ashwin's side. They should be rerouting the navy to Vani, yet all they can think about is the warlord. Short-sighted fools. The Demon Raja's head start could mean the end of the war. I push away from the wall and march down the corridor. Turn back and tell her you love her. Don't part in anger. I nearly bow to my apprehension but stay on course. Last night I slept on a bench in the garden instead of returning to Kali's chamber. I resolve to leave her be, and I will, because the only other option is to compel her to choose between the prince and me right now. And that would make me an even bigger fool than they are, for I am not merely competing against a prince. I am up against her throne. She is long past needing me as her guard. Whatever happens on that mountaintop, Kali can defend herself. I am more concerned about them wasting time. But time is all I can give her. Time to consider her future. Time to remember she never asked to become a Rani. Time to realize she can have a peaceful life with me. Unless I am utterly mistaken, and Kali has chosen her path. She may, in fact, never relinquish her throne. She may be falling in love with Ashwin, and she is sparing me heartache by not saying so. I increase my pace, no longer departing in anger, but with another emotion that I do not allow myself to inspect too closely before I shove it down and lock it away. Yasin and Natasha dine on breakfast in Kali's chamber. Natasha leaps out of the way when I storm in, the swinging door knocking against her chair. Rowan nibbles on pieces of mango. He's just 14, 2 years younger than his sister Opal. Anu, let our siblings be safe. Mother sits out on the balcony, smoking her handheld hookah pipe while she speaks with Ambassador Chit. Smoke curls rise around them.
Rowan told us Brock and Opal are missing, Yatin says in his deep burr.
I pace alongside the breakfast table, half expecting Kali to realize her foolishness and join us. But Ashwin was right. This is Kali's choice. Natasha dishes rice into a bowl in front of Rowan. He ignores it. Yatin tips back in his chair closer to me. I pause beside him.
He asked where Brother Sean was,
he whispers. Grief over the death of my mentor rises anew. Brother Sean took in Opal and Rowan after their widowed mother was executed and found them safe passage out of Vani. Rowan and I feel his loss the most. I pace again, restless to act. I cannot wait for Kali forever. If she thinks Ashwin's plan of allying with Hastin will save us, then let them have their idealistic idiocy. My brother needs me. I stopped tromping around. Rowan deserves more time to mourn, but I need his help. Rowan, I need you to fly me to the location where you last saw Opal and Brock. The Gaeler unbends from his slouch, buoyed by my request. His eagerness quiets my concern about how he will fare on our mission.
Devon, don't be rash,
Yatin says, direct but always respectful.
Rowan said the army has catapults and more than enough soldiers to fire them. The troops will shoot you from the sky.
The army will have marched on by now. Brock and Opal could be waiting for us where they landed. I need a Gaeler to take me.
And me,
Natasha says. Yatin and I stare at her in joint astonishment. She blushes, squirming under our silent inquiry. Why is she volunteering? Natasha takes care of herself. She has extended her self-preservation to include Yatin and sometimes Kali, but no one else, especially not Brock. The two of them have never gotten along. He parched her the first time they met, and she has never forgotten.
We should stay,
Yatin counters.
The wing flyer will travel faster without us.
He has a point, but I would appreciate two more people on the lookout for Opal and Brock. Even so, coming along is their decision. I have no illusions about how dangerous this will be.
I want to go, Natasha insists. My older sister passed away last year. After our parents died, she was all the family I had left.
She speaks more quietly, to steady her voice.
I don't want either of you to lose a sibling as well.
Her concern extends to Rowan, as his circumstance closely mirrors her own. His sister is also the only family member he has left. I should have considered Natasha's decision was personal, but she often acts impervious to heartache, others and her own. I am beginning to see she is not as immune to compassion as she would like us to believe. Yatin links hands with her.
We'll both go.
It's settled then. Eat up, soldier. I slap Rowan on the back. We need your powers refreshed for our flight. Rowan perks up even more at soldier and shovels in mango as fast as he can chew.
Should we tell Kalinda and Ashwin?
Natasha asks, eating the last of her breakfast.
They already know.
Despite my effort to sound neutral, rancor burns my tone. Natasha pauses chewing, sensing I am omitting something. I set forth our plan before she can prod at me.
Rowan, can you be ready to depart in an hour?
I'll do my best,
he says, cramming his mouth with fruit.
Everyone be ready to leave then.
I step nearer to the terrace. My mother and Chit are still conversing in private. Their bodies are turned toward one another, sealing me out. I clamp off a sting of envy. I have fretted over my mother's safety for days. Chit has no right to re-enter our lives and take all her attention, particularly after abandoning us. He may not be my father, but he could have filled that role for both Brock and me. Gods know we needed him. Buttoning up my jacket, I stride out of the chamber. I will keep my word to my mother and find Brock. No other outcome is acceptable. Less than half an hour later, I weave my way down the dock, rife with sailors, preparing for departure. A dozen moored navy vessels line the wharf. Most are built like Enki's Heart, with one mast and the capacity to hold up 200 passengers. The ship on the far end is the biggest, with three masts. I anticipate it can carry twice as many people. On the whole, I estimate the Navy is sending up to 3,000 men to battle. Past the sailors loading supplies for their voyage, I locate Admiral Rimba on the largest craft. He waves me aboard. I jump on deck and maneuver through the working sailors.
General Naik,
the Admiral says by way of welcome.
I received word that the Kindred and the Prince aren't coming. Are you still joining us?
No, sir, but I am leaving for the continent. My brother has gone missing. I told my mother I'd find him. Admiral Rimba frowns at my brusqueness and then enters the cabin. I follow him to his command console, which is covered in maps. He removes mint leaves from a small tin and rolls them into a bundle.
Inda told me Prince Ashwin and Kindred Kalinda are departing for the mainland by another means as well.
We're not leaving together. They have another destination.
So I heard. They intend to meet the warlord.
Admiral Rimba presses the bundle of mint into the side of his cheek, but it does not impede his speech.
And you'd like for us to alter our destination from Iresh Tavani?
I would, I reply. Relieved, one person in Lestari understands military strategy. The Admiral waves me over to the map at the other end of the console.
Datu Bulan agrees. He sent orders for me to lead the fleet up the River Ninsar. The river goes around the Bahavia Desert and connects here to the River Namu, which flows into Vani. The passage narrows, so we must sail single file, but we should fit.
Should?
Our navy has never voyaged that far inland.
The odds continue to stand against us.
How long until you reach Vani?
He weighs my question before replying.
We have enough aquifers to propel us there in 7 days. The reverse journey is 6. Pushing upriver against the current will slow us.
The Demon Raja is estimated to arrive in Vani within 6 days, but I do not press the Admiral. He and his men realize our urgency and will do their best. I point to the section of the map where the two rivers meet.
My party and I will meet you here. How long do we have?
About 4 days. If you aren't there when we sail by, we will continue on without you.
We'll be there.
Admiral Rimba pushes a pin into the map at the cross-section of rivers. The finality of our arrangement bores into me. I must find Brock and meet the Admiral's fleet on time, or we will be on our own. Natesha and Rowan wait in the garden near the wing flyer. Yatin stands off to the side, frowning up at the sky. One would think air sickness afflicts him instead of me. I am already ill in anticipation of our flight. Yatin and Natesha have changed into sturdier travel clothes. Natesha traded her skirt for Princess Jemmy's favored attire, loose trousers. They also brought supply packs for themselves and Rowan, and one for me. My mother and Ambassador Chit stand off to the side, come to say goodbye.
Tears shine in Mother's eyes.
Be careful.
I will. I draw her in close. She smells of hookah smoke and jasmine.
Love you, Devon.
Mother whispers.
Emotions crowd my voice.
I manage a nod and she moves on to bid farewell to the others. Ambassador Chit saunters over, his hands clasped solemnly behind him. I heard about Prince Ashwin's plans. He sent word to the warlord, but he isn't waiting for a reply. He, the Kindred, and a small group of guards are flying to Samia. He asked me to go with them and help negotiate. Chit has closer ties to Hastin than we do. The warlord once served with Kishan, Kali's father, as well.
Do you think Hastin will unite with the Empire?
Difficult to say. Hastin has always been unpredictable.
I scoff under my breath.
Unpredictable? The man is volatile.
I'd like to join your group instead, if you'll have me.
Chit clasps and unclasps his hands in front of himself. Uncertainly.
Your mother said it was all right to tell you our history.
Mathura told me long ago that Brock is my son. I sent dozens of letters to Tarek requesting to acquire her. It felt uncouth to offer him coin, but men like Tarek put a value on everything. I offered a more than fair amount for Mathura's freedom, but I didn't consider how much Tarak relished possessing something another man envied. Chit glances at my mother, who embraces Yatin in a farewell. I should have known he would have never let me have her and Brock.
You asked for them both?
I ask, cocking a brow. And you, Chit amends. My disbelief falters. I asked to trade for all three of you. I own a sizable plantation on an outer island, plenty of room for two boys to run around. You're a little older than I thought you'd be when we met again, but perhaps someday you'll visit me there.
I'd enjoy that.
Chit was not required to justify himself to me, but I am grateful that he did. You should go to the Sultanate. Gather the Tarachandian army and stand by for word from me or Admiral Rimba. We may yet need their troops. Mother rejoins us, slipping her arm through mine.
What did I miss?
Ambassador Chit has some business in Janardan, I answer. You should go with him. Mother squints at me.
I don't need you to manage my life, son.
I know he's Brock's father, I answer without condemnation. Though she prompted Chit to speak with me, she still blanches. You need time to discuss how to approach Brock with the news. He'll have questions, but I think he will be open-minded. My mother gives a closed-lipped nod. I kiss her cheek, and then Chit draws closer to her. Seeing them side by side, I imagine what it would be like to visit his home together. May we all live long enough to find out. The first stirrings of Rowan's winds whistle through the garden.
Devon, Yatin calls. We're ready.
Shouldn't you wait for Kalinda?
Mother asks. Kali would be here if she planned to see us off. I start for the wing flyer. I could seek Kali out and plead with her to change her mind. But the last time I thought I knew what was best for her, I wound up in a prison camp, and she sought solace in the boy prince. And truthfully, I am not fully prepared for her ultimate decision.
Devon!
A voice shouts from behind me. My foot strikes a lump on the ground and I stumble sideways. Princess Jemmy hurries to me.
Sorry, I meant to stop you, not trip you.
She gestures at the mound of grass she lifted with her powers.
You're leaving?
That's right, I reply, setting off again. She stays at my side.
Admiral Rimba said you're meeting the fleet in a few days. I asked to go with him, but my father won't allow it. May I go with you?
I halt and take in her white tunic tucked into dark trousers and the machete at her waist. You don't strike me as the type of woman who asks permission.
You've never angered my father.
You aren't instilling much confidence in my letting you come along. I stride away, but she tugs me back.
Please, General.
She rests her hand on my chest and bats her sooty lashes as though a gnat is caught in her eye.
Let me go with you.
You really aren't told no often. She runs a finger up my neck to my chin.
I'd never tell you no.
A chuckle escapes me. Even if Princess Jemmy were to charm me, I cannot give her what she wants. The prince has more clout with your father than I do. Ask him. She begins to protest, but I rush right over her. I won't be accused of kidnapping the Datu's heir. I suggest you endear yourself to Ashwin or forget about leaving Lestari. She drops her hand.
The prince is a wet noodle. I knew right away you were the one I could count on.
I should be irate that her fawning over me has been a manipulation, but I am tempted to ask her to repeat her wet noodle comment to Kali.
Will you at least put in a good word for me with Ashwin?
I grin humorlessly at her request. You're asking the wrong person. Persuade Kalinda to your side and you'll get what you want.
That's it? I need only talk to the kindred?
Believe me, I call out, winds whipping at my back. She can be hard to convince.
Everyone waits aboard the lightweight bird-like flyer. I climb on, lie across the riding platform between Yatin and Rowan, and grip the bamboo navigation bar.
Could you hold on any tighter? Rowan asks me.
I purse my lips, a warning for him to stop teasing.
He knows how much I dislike flying. His summoned winds pluck us off the ground into the morning sky. I wave farewell to Mother and Chit and stretch my gaze to the palace grounds and balconies for a glimpse of Kali. But we whiz away from the glimmering spires that soar over the aquamarine cove and pass over the breaker. The sea of souls unrolls like a ribbon to the horizon. Down the coast, a ship lurks near the breaker. The Sea Raider's yellow two-mast vessel is easily identifiable. The raiders must be lying in wait for the Navy's departure. I expect they will assume the Prince and Kali are aboard one of their ships and pursue the fleet to the mainland. At the very least, Kali's decision to fly to Samia will help her evade Captain Locke. Even so, I already regret leaving without bidding her goodbye. And God's mercy.
7. Kalinda. I limp down the corridor for the open archway that leads to the garden. A breeze flows inside, the tail end of stronger drafts summoned by a gaoler. I quicken my step, but my bad leg gives out, forcing me to brace against the doorway. Gritting my teeth, I hustle outside under the palm trees. Whooshing air momentarily steals my breath. The wing flyer is airborne. Devon, Natesha, and Yatin ride with Rowan. I limp for the garden clearing, calling for Devon. The loud winds thrash the palm fronds and drown out my shouts. The wing flyer streaks over the cove and quickly shrinks into the sky. I plunk down on a stone bench, rubbing my sore knee. After Devon left Ashwin's chamber, everything moved so fast. Ashwin dispatched a carrier dove with a letter to Hostin, and then we went to the Datu. Bulan agreed with our endeavor to ally with the rebels, and ordered Inda and Pons to fly us to meet Hostin. Everyone launched into a flurry of preparations for our departure. I returned to my empty bedchamber to collect my belongings when, from the terrace, I saw Devon and my friends leaving. I squeeze my eyes shut on gathering tears. Gods know when we will meet again.
Kindred?
I stifle a groan. Of all the people to see me upset. Princess Jemmy sits beside me.
I realize I haven't made a good first impression, she says. But nothing happens between Devon and me.
I didn't assume otherwise. My chilliness should be off-putting, yet the princess loiters.
He watches you, you know. My father used to look at my mother the same way Devon looks at you.
Princess Jenny hugs one knee to her chest, the ease of her trousers allowing the movement while retaining modesty.
The general's party is supposed to meet with the Navy in 4 days, where the River Ninsar connects with the River Namu. I'd like to go with the sailors, but the admiral won't let me on board without the prince's permission. He's a taskmaster about protocol. Can you help a fellow sister warrior?
Her sweet talk about sister warriors does not motivate me, but Admiral Rimba requiring her to receive authorization from Ashwin is ridiculous. Datu Bulon enlists female virtue guards, and women serve in his navy. Clearly he approves. Moreover, Princess Jemmy is a grown woman and the next ruler of the Southern Isles. Fighting for her homeland should be her choice. Tell Admiral Rinba I've requested your attendance, and let him know my party will also meet with the Navy where the rivers connect. She scrunches her lips to the side.
Will the prince honor your decision?
I can think of no reason why Ashwin would protest bringing another Buddha into our ranks. We are willing to accept the rebels' assistance, so we can certainly accept hers. If you'd like to ask him, he's inside. But you should hurry. The fleet looks ready to disembark. Princess Jemmy's attention zips to the docks. The sailors have finished loading the vessels and they file aboard. She hops up.
No need. I'll tell the admiral. We'll meet again in 4 days.
She takes off downhill with a speed and ease that wring a drop of envy out of me. Trousers on a woman. Why didn't I think of that? I step out from behind the dressing screen wearing plain, dark clothes that I found in the cabinet. The fitted trousers will take some adapting to, but I already preferred their convenience over the lengthy process of pleating, pinning, and tucking a sari over a blouse and petticoat. I smile to myself as I pack another set of trousers and tunic to bring to Samia.
"What's so amusing?" Mathura asks, entering my chamber.
I was imagining Priestess Mita's expression when she sees me in trousers. Mathura sizes me up.
A skirt is more proper for a Rani, but they're flattering on you.
I glimpse my profile in the mirror glass. The trousers define my lower body and hips. Priestess Mita will say my attire is scandalous, but my wardrobe is the least of the changes that have come over me since we last saw each other.
You just missed Devon,
Mathura notes. I know. I stuff the last of my belongings into my pack, pushing hard to fit the extra clothes. Between the colder mountain weather and the chill inside me, it will be a battle to stay warm. Mathura sits on the end of the bed.
Natasha told me you've grown close to Prince Ashwin.
Before I can guess what she is insinuating, she finishes,
That's for the best. You're the kindred of the Tarachand Empire and a good one at that.
I narrow my eyes at her. What do you want, Mathura?
Devon will never interfere with your duties. He'll hold on to the dream of you unless you tell him otherwise.
I love your son, I say, forcing an even tone.
Do you love him enough to step away from your throne? Few women have the influence you hold. Natasha says the prince respects you. He says you're equals. Do you understand how rare that is? That's a gift from the gods. You'd be a fool to squander it.
She forgets I am not only the kindred, I am a burner. My people will never accept me as I am. Even the Ranis held captive in the palace were raised to despise my kind. I hid what I am from them, and I doubt I will regain their trust once they learn my true heritage. When the time is right, I will step aside. Mathura clucks her tongue.
My son is a good man, but that's folly, Kalinda. You're a Rani. You'll always be beyond his reach.
God's alive, I hope Devon does not share her opinion. Maybe he does. Maybe that's why he left without saying goodbye, why he hasn't asked me to relinquish my throne. Maybe he's afraid I won't walk away. More doubts worm into my mind. I sided with Ashwin about the rebels, but Devon understands loyalty and duty better than anyone else. He will think back on our disagreement and realize that I supported Ashwin for the sake of the Empire. I just hope Devon forgives me for the hurt my choice is causing him. Mathura adjusts her sari pleats.
I'm leaving for Janardhan with Ambassador Chit. I trust when I see you next, this will be resolved.
It will be. By then the war will be over, and Ashwin will have secured his throne and palace. I will be free of my obligations, free to openly love Devon, and free to tell Mathura to quit meddling. I will savor that day. A knock comes at the door and Inda lets herself in. She is followed by a balding man in a long indigo robe.
Healer Migo has come for Kalinda, says Inda. We'll leave you two alone.
Mathura rises, stately in her grace.
Think on my words, Kalinda.
She bows to emphasize my standing as kindred, and sweeps out of the chamber after Inda. Healer Migo sets his basket down on the table, rolls up his sleeves, and examines me with pale gray eyes.
Inda told me you were corrupted by a demon.
I grapple with his verbiage. Corrupted sounds as though I have been irrevocably wrecked. We don't have long before I have to leave. Can you heal me?
All in due time.
He unpacks his basket and lifts his hands, palms facing me.
I need you to burn me.
Burn you?
Don't fret, child. Do as I say.
Healer Mago presses our hands together, our palms and fingers touching. His old hands are marginally bigger than mine, and smooth as the inside of a coconut. His arms are covered in more hair than his head.
Go on.
My fingers glow white-yellow with soul fire. His flesh must be blistering, yet he does not wince or draw back. He fixates on my fingertips. As I push my powers into them, my fire darkens to greenish-yellow, then a sickly jade, and then sapphire sparks fly out. I douse my powers and shrink away from the vanishing blue fire. The healer lowers his unburned hands. How did you do that? I ask.
Years of practice.
Healer Migo unrolls his sleeves, his gaze resisting mine.
I'm sorry, Kindred. The Voidus toxins are beyond healing. Only he can remove his poison from you.
What? My hope to extract the cold fire within me wastes away. But what if he doesn't?
Then I'm afraid his toxic cold will smother your soul fire until it's gone.
I'll die? No mortal can live without soul fire. It is our essence.
Your mortal half is already dying.
At my expression of horror, he adds,
You can try raising, but I do not recommend you do so. The poisons would be quelled for a short while, but they would return, twofold.
My belly flips and dives. I have raised once before. An aquifire cut me several times to bleed out a poison that hid my abilities. I will not relive that excruciating ritual for a temporary reprieve. Can you do anything? I plead.
No,
he replies, his tone gentle.
I'm sorry.
I sink onto the chair, knocking my pack to the floor. The temptation to lie down and let the cold consume me nearly pushes me to tears. The healer repacks his basket. Why did he even come if he cannot help me? I want to tell him to go away, but I withhold my bitterness. Lashing out at him would be wrong, and I cannot abide the thought of Udug winning in any small way. He will not compel me to cry or give in to my endless shivers. He would have me believe I cannot survive. But we have the Lestarian Navy on our side, and soon the rebels will stand with us. Both are mercies from the gods. I harvest a kernel of courage and push out my voice. How long do I have until?
The full effects of the poisons take a moon to manifest.
Udug poisoned me a fortnight ago. I have about that much time left to find a remedy the healer is unaware of, or persuade Udug to cure me. Any chance is better than the healer's predicted outcome. Are you certain no one can ward off the Voider's powers? I ask, thinking of Ashwin. What if someone's soul fire can lessen the cold within me?
I would caution against relying on another's soul fire to supplement your own. Such practices are unpredictable and will worsen your side effects.
My fear returns, as does his kindly voice.
If you stay in Lestari, I will make your final hours comfortable.
I scoop up my bag. I must go.
Kindred, I pray you'll reconsider. The damage the Voider's powers are wreaking
is less than what he plans to do to the world. I pause at the door. Thank you. I trust you'll keep this between us. I wait for the healer to grasp my expectation, and then go. Ashwin rushes down the corridor, dressed in his travel clothes.
There you are. We're ready to depart.
He slows to a halt, his eyes growing.
What are you wearing?
Trousers. Mathura said they flatter me. His color reddens. He fumbles for words that do not come. Healer Migo exits my chamber and leaves in the opposite direction.
Who's that?
Ashwin asks. A healer, Inda sent to see me. Should we go?
Wait.
Ashwin holds me in place.
What did he say?
I am dying, not dead. Right now the difference, thank Anu, is tremendous. I muster a wobbly half-smile. I'll be fine.
Thank the skies.
Ashwin's arms come around me.
You're my strength, Kalinda. I cannot do this without you.
I should move away, but his nearness drizzles over me like warmed honey. Irmigo must be incorrect. Ashwin's touch serves as an antidote to the Voider's poison. Embracing his nearness for the good of my health cannot be harmful, or I would feel something besides this blissful absence of cold. He releases me, and the hoarfrost inside me shakes loose again. My body's reaction makes up my mind. I cannot do this without him either. Ashwin will be my protection against the Voider's poison in the days to come. Outside the main palace entrance, a wing flyer fills the crushed shell courtyard. Ashwin and I join Pons and Inda, who secure our packs to the passenger platform with rope. Datu Bulan speaks to a palace guard off to the side. In the distance, the last navy vessel disappears through the breaker passageway, out to sea. I didn't know the Datu kept wing flyers, I say.
He traded the Paljorians for them a few years back, Pons replies.
Prince Ashwin, asks Bulan, striding over.
Have you seen my daughter? Jimmy was supposed to meet us here.
She's gone with Admiral Rimba, I answer. Jimmy volunteered to enlist, and I accepted. The Datu's mouth drops open, and his color rises. Ashwin mutters a curse and scrubs at his forehead.
Kalinda, you didn't.
Jemmy said the Admiral wouldn't allow her to go without our authorization. I lob my gaze back and forth between them, uncertain why they are angry. I saw no sense in turning down a capable trembler. Datu Bulan blusters out a string of indecipherable syllables and then shouts at his guard.
Signal the bridge! Tell them to bring back my daughter!
They're gone, sir, replies the guard.
The Navy has passed through the breaker. Then send a boat after her.
Princess Jenny said she wanted to go, I explain, trying to pacify him. The Datu marches up to me, his white robes stark against ruddy cheeks.
The Admiral was under orders to leave my daughter here. Prince Ashwin and I determined Jenny wouldn't go to the war front. The prince suggested we exclude her, a Buta ruler. All command was to fall to her should you fail. Now the demon Raja could wipe out my people's future.
My apologies,
Ashwin says.
The kindred was unaware of our agreement.
Jemmy didn't tell me either, I add. I'm sorry. Bulan jabs his finger at my nose.
If anything happens to her, I will find you.
He swings around in a cloud of white and trudges off. Inda calls out from the wing flyer. Jimmy will be fine. Bulan still thinks of her as his little girl, but I wouldn't engage her in battle. Ashwin speaks under his breath.
That may be so, Kalinda, but you should have discussed this with me first. We should make these decisions together.
You didn't tell me to leave Jimmy behind, I whisper in return.
I suggested she stay to appease Bulan.
Did you not wonder why he sent Inda to Iresh to participate in the trial tournament instead of Jemmy? He values his daughter above all else. Ensuring her protection was my best leverage. Even with that, our trade agreement was too generous.
Ashwin is irritated with me, but also with himself for negotiating poorly. Excluding Jemmy from battle wasn't our choice to make, I say. Ashwin rubs at his headache.
In this case it was.
I cut off my next retort. Naturally, the Datu wants to shelter his daughter, but had Jimmy been a man, I have no doubt she would have been sent off to war. Had Jimmy been a man, who would Ashwin have suggested we leave behind? Another woman? Would he have excluded me from battle?
What's done is done,
he says.
From now on, we consult each other about everything.
Fine. I revolve away and hastily tie my hair back for the flight. He climbs onto the wing flyer with Inda and Pons. I ride beside Ashwin, careful not to touch him or his healing warmth. After all I have done to secure and retain my throne, I deserve his trust to make decisions by myself. Pons's winds elevate us. Inda releases a squeal of distress, her grip a stranglehold on the navigation bar. She's afraid of flying? Come to think of it, I have never ridden on a wing flyer with her. A hearty gust propels us over the palatial city. Inda buries her face against Pons's back, hiding from the lofty view. I drink in the sight of the turquoise cove and ivory beaches. Lestari truly is a haven. I wish I had relaxed and enjoyed our reprieve in paradise. Our stay was too short and fraught with strife, but Princess Jemmy's willingness to dive into battle boosts my confidence that we, the Southern Isles, Tarachand Empire, and rebels, can unite to defeat the foe that threatens us.
8. Devon. The ripe scent of drying manure wafts from the field. Beneath my boots, the grass is trampled with wagon and horse tracks. After nearly 2 days of flying, stopping intermittently along the way, I am thankful my feet are on the ground. I crouch and finger the grass. It is still damp from the rainstorm that passed through this afternoon. Although the traces left by the Demon Raja's slow-moving army are 3 days old, the troops' absence does not put me at ease. Yatin and Natasha search for signs of Brock and Opal nearer to the tree line. Dense foliage dissuades wanderers from venturing into the morass. The jungle dominates Jenardin's territory between the sea and the Empire. Brock and Opal would not duck into that tangle of trees unless they wished never to come out. Rowan scours the grasslands behind me, sending whistling gusts through low bushes to expose any place our siblings could have hidden. Where in the gods' names did they go? Brock left no discernible footprints or scorched vegetation to hint at his direction. The army's tracks tell another story. Indents in the drying mud came from heavy artillery, catapults that fire heavy bolts and large rocks. Other wagons were weighted down with rams and siege ramps to scale or pound through thick, high brick walls. All of this I can discern. These defenses are standard among the Imperial Army. But still, no sign of Brock.
Rowan, where did you last see them?
I ask, my attention split between him and the jungle to the east. The morass forced even the Demon Raja to go around it. He strolls to a knoll.
They crashed here. We couldn't circle back because the archers started shooting.
His voice cracks, as is common for boys his age, and he clears his croaky throat.
Opal was lying right here last I saw her.
Arrows stick out of the ground. I inspect the flattened grass and find splinters of the wreckage. The troops must have disassembled the wing flyer and hauled the parts along as firewood. At least we know Opal and Brock did not fly away from here.
What's nearby?
I ask Yatin, the experienced navigator in our group. He studies the position of the sun.
The closest village is due south, a day or so on foot.
The army is trekking northwest into Tarachand. The border is not too far ahead. South would be Brock and Opal's wisest direction. Yatin and I would select that route. But we searched the end of the clearing and found no tracks heading to the village. Any other tracks they left were beaten into obscurity by the hundreds of men who came through.
There's another possibility, Yatin says lowly.
Rowan kicks at the end of an arrow protruding from the ground. Neither of us wants to consider that our siblings were taken. I would like to think Brock would not have been captured without setting this field alight to stand as a memorial to his indignation. But circumstances could have stopped him.
It's likely they've been captured. I put off the prospect that anything worse has happened. We will explore one possibility at a time. The rest of you stay here and guard the wing flyer. I should return the day after tomorrow, in time for us to fly to the meeting point.
I'm going with you.
Rowan holds his thin body tense, anticipating my refusal, but I respect his grit.
You'll need me to listen for my sister.
We should all stay together, Natasha says,
pinning me with a fierce stare to wither me into compliance. She forgets I grew up in the palace, surrounded by sister warriors. They could sober a drunkard with a single glare. Yatin stays locked in worry. He is a friend to Brock and me, but he came along only after Natasha committed to the task. I should not have agreed to let them join us. We cannot take the wing flyer or they'll see us, I explained to dissuade her. My guess is the main body of troops are a day, maybe a day and a half away. We'll have to run through the night to catch up to them. Natasha stretches her arms over her head. I won't let you slow me down. She's as stubborn as a rattle with a viper in its teeth. I look to Yatin to make her see reason.
We'll keep up, General, he says.
I hate that title of command and what it meant to my father. If he were here, he would order Yatin, Natasha, and Rowan to follow him with no thought for their safety. I will not force them either way. Your choice, but if you come along, I'm not your commander.
Understood,
Rowan replies, mustering a brave front. Still, his disappointment in not finding his sister drags his mouth down. I asked him along. I put it in his head that we could find Opal and Brock, so I distract him from his concerns by asking him to help me drag the wing flyer into the trees for cover. Yatin and I also drop our swords there. Their size and weight will slow our pace. Yatin sulks back into the field, brooding about leaving his Kanda behind. Natasha offers him her Halidi, a double-sided knife.
I still have daggers.
Thank you, little lotus.
Yatin bends his huge frame over her and kisses her nose. Kali kissed my nose just 2 days ago. The memory pulverizes me. She made her choice, and it wasn't me. I may need to get used to this feeling. Our group takes turns whittling down our packs to necessities. Rowan is the smallest of us, even slighter than Natasha. As Yatin helps him tighten his straps, I slip goods from Rowan's pack into mine and then regard the path left by the army. The flat land lies open ahead, beckoning us homeward. I set off at a jog, and three sets of footfalls follow. My friends match my assertive pace, and we trek onward to our beloved empire of unforgiving deserts and unreachable mountains.
9. Kalinda. Freezing weather has come early to the Alpana Mountains. We fly in a steep climb over the powdery hills, the higher peaks obscured by soupy clouds. Snowflakes pinwheel around us. The white flecks land on Ashwin's dark eyebrows and pale cheeks. We huddle together on the passenger plank, our teeth chattering out of sync with our shivering. Pons guides us up, up, up into thinner air. Inda burrows under a wool blanket, her eyes shut. She's awake, but barely tolerating our scent. Our 2-day flight has felt endless. I have never known a wintry depth this dreary. I cannot distinguish where the poisonous cold inside me ends and the bracing weather starts. Each pull of air drives icy spikes into my chest. The growing numbness dulls my focus and drags my eyelids closed.
She must stay awake, Inda calls to Ashwin over the wind. Warm her.
Ashwin wraps his arms around me and I curl into his side. His body heat combats my chills and helps me withstand the pressing cold. He lays his cheek against mine, and his voice rouses my senses.
You smell like moonlight.
I lift my chin and our noses bump. His soul fire glows deep in his eyes, a well of captivating warmth. Pull away. Don't be enticed. His lips graze my cheek. Heat blazes through me, starting as a spark and igniting to a blessed burn. The ice inside me melts, dripping away. I'm so close to feeling whole again. I press against him more snugly and slide my hands around his bare back, the bitter winds a distant force. His lips grasp at mine and bore past the last of my restraint. My return kiss writhes with need as Ashwin's soul fire blinds all else. The wing flyer banks sharply, wrenching us apart, and I see the beacon atop the temple's north tower. Home. The last time I saw this light, Devon led me into the forest to show me